एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो। चलो ये कर लेते हैं, दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो।
हाय, आई एम अक्षय।
हाय, दिस इज सौरभ एंड यू आर लिसनिंग टू द फाउंडर थीसिस पॉडकास्ट। वी मीट सम ऑफ द मोस्ट सेलिब्रेटेड स्टार्टअप फाउंडर्स इन द कंट्री
एंड वी वांट टू लर्न हाउ टू बिल्ड अ यूनिकॉर्न।
जस्ट अ क्विक नोट अबाउट दिस शो। We'd like to apologize to all our listeners for the technical and audio issues with regards to this recording. A transcript of this entire conversation will be available on our website, thepodium.in. A link to the transcript will also be attached in the description of the show.
Hi, my name is Amit Gupta. I'm CEO and co-founder of Yulu.
Our guest today could not have been more unique. He's the co-founder of two unicorns. And instead of resting on his laurels, he decided to quit and start a brand new startup that solves a social problem. Amit Gupta started life in a business family in Kanpur, but he was slated for bigger and better things in life, having co-founded the first unicorn from India, InMobi. But that's not all. He also conceptualized and launched Glance within InMobi, which today counts Google as a backer and is a unicorn by itself. And never one to settle, he's now hard at work trying to solve one of the most chronic problems facing city dwellers: traffic and last mile connectivity. You see, no matter how good a public transport a city has, people still need mobility to reach their destination from the metro station, etc. And that's where Amit's four-year-old startup, Yulu, comes in. Yulu is solving the twin problem of traffic and pollution by renting out e-bikes that people can rent from drop-off at conveniently located docks. And you may think that the lockdown would have hit them hard, but you'd be surprised at the numbers. Listen on as Amit Gupta talks to Akshay Dutt about his fascinating entrepreneurial journey.
So, like, when you turn 30, you, like, quit to...
Yes, a month prior to that. I quit, okay. And I actually started another company, which was not InMobi, by the way. Hmm. It was into business intelligence and analytics platform company. Hmm. And although around same time, my batchmate Naveen, he was moving from US to India. Hmm. So, you know, he came to me and he parked himself in Bangalore, and then we started talking about, you know, how things are, etc. And then he also had this idea of doing a startup, and I thought that maybe it's a good idea for me to become part of the same team, and that's how InMobi happened.
Okay.
So rather than doing that business intelligence platform thing, I decided to mCoach back then. mCoach became InMobi, as you know.
So when you and Naveen had your initial discussions about what you will do, what was the idea, and, you know, how did that evolve into what finally got executed? Like tell me about that journey of the go-to-market journey, if I can use that term.
So it was 2006, and back then mobile phone started becoming important. India started having hundreds of millions of people. Mobile was no longer in the hands of crazy rich people. It started to be seen in the hand of maid, drivers, etc. And it was very evident that, you know, India's connectivity or communication answer is going to be this device. And we were very fascinated with what Google was doing to desktop PC, and they created this huge ad business. So we thought that maybe this mobile phone is also going to be same, where there will be, because if a lot of people are using it and they are doing more than just talking, they will be consuming time on that device, and maybe there's an advertising opportunity. So that's how we thought of building an ad business for mobile phones. And I think back then it was actually very, very crazy idea, because there was no smartphone. the smartest phone which was available was Moto Razr or BlackBerry. That was the smartness possible stuff.
But this was pre-iPhone, basically.
Pre-iPhone, pre-Android, yeah. And then when we started the company, it was primarily on SMS. And we thought that we'll probably do a search. And that's why the company M and Coach.
Mobile, M for mobile there, basically.
Correct. But very soon we realized that, you know, it's not going to work. And we probably, because when you are doing ads with respect to text, which is SMS, people here are very limited by the number of
characters
that you can deal with. Second thing, there's no targeting. Third, there's no delivery because it was a one-way, you know, broadcast. And third thing is, you know, you don't know what happens after that. So there's no trackability, there's no targeting. And the medium itself was very limited because of the size. And then phones were also not big. They were very small. So all you can do is basically just, and then because of, you know, this whole A to P, which is application to person, the SMS started becoming more spammy. So, and anything which gets basically negative mindset, from a consumer experience perspective, you cannot do a good job with advertising. So, while we were running it, but we also started to understand that this is not going to be a future of...
But tell me how you actually got that off the ground. Did you use your own savings or did you get some angel investment and then launched it? And how did you spread the word? Like, I mean... You know, advertising business depends on volume of users. So how were you acquiring users to actually launch M-Coach and make money from M-Coach?
So very good question. So we actually raised $500,000 of angel capital, angel money. So Mumbai Angel funded InMobi or M-Coach. We were the first investment for them. And then we had a short quote. If I don't know how old are you, but
roughly the same age as you, I guess. My graduation also got over in 2000.
Nice. So Akshay, do you probably remember there was a 8888?
Yep. Yeah.
Where there was a short code, right? Time. So we also basically got 555 actually. Five. And then anyone who was looking for some information, so there was to send some keyword to that number, and return will give you the best food or where is a deal going on. So that was a model. And you know, this whole pull mechanism become push mechanism, where we started working with likes of NDTV, you know, Quick Info, where they were sending these A to P messages, and we were inserting ads in that.
Help me understand A to P a little better. This is the first time I'm hearing this term.
It's a machine which is sending a message to a person.
Okay.
And then we verify the message to you. It's called A to P. Is, it is basically just happening on a click of a button. It's not having emotion.
Okay.
So this is how things are.
So you essentially went through like a partnerships route to acquire users, like you tied up with these brands to help them send their advertising messages. Like that was the route.
So that was the business model. And because it was not seen with positive eyes, we started feeling that it's not worth it. So this is how we basically decided to look at mobile internet rather than SMS. Also renamed the company with InMobi. So that was the background.
When did you do the pivot? Because this was like post iPhone launch or like, you know, because mobile internet was like...
It was actually before iPhone. We were running the business on mobile internet.
Okay. So
there was a WAP phone, Nokia, Motorola, and BlackBerry.
They had a very, very primitive browser.
Very primitive. After we transitioned from this to this, then we were able to get to the business model of smartphone after 1 year.
So what exactly did you pivot into, like on mobile internet? Like what were you doing?
Yeah, so it's the same thing, but rather than you trying to push an ad, the ad is more about you know, being shown as a part of a web page.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were like building web pages for
companies. An NDTV who back then had a web page. And then web page will have links and banners, which have ads.
Okay. So that was like the initial offering, like building the web pages and monetizing them through banners for brands.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Hmm. And then one fine day, we basically took a hard decision that we should kill this whole SMS business. And then, we never looked back after that.
Okay. And then how did this WAP business evolve? You know, as the landscape changed, and I mean, in a way, Google also came into the same space when they launched Android. How did InMobi evolve to meet the changing landscape?
Sure. So, see, from a product perspective, it was the same product. In fact, Google ended up buying a competition of ours called AdMob. And that's how they got into this space. But the difference was that Google plus AdMob, they were building this business in Western market. And we basically were building this market in Asia. So that's how we were basically able to kind of, things were happening in parallel. So we were able to survive, and that whole model of east to west work for us.
And help me understand how the revenues worked, like, you know, in those years, like what was like the first year revenue, and how did that grow over the next couple of years, and what was the breakup of that revenue?
Difficult for me to tell you first of all how much I remember in terms of breakup. Those are not public numbers.
Okay.
As you can imagine, that mobile internet actually grew like a wildfire, and with our small base of revenue. So you actually do see 50 to 100x. It's actually kind of a wildfire. So you you grow very, very fast. And we also adding countries after countries in our execution. So we started from India. Then we added our business to Southeast Asia, primarily Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore. And then we added African region, European region happened next. So at a country level, numbers were growing. But also we were adding, because the platform was common, so we were also able to add a bunch of new countries. Every quarter, we will be launching our business in one more country.
Okay.
And that's how the numbers were kind of moving in a much faster speed. It was an exponential rise in terms of, you know, growth of the business.
Okay. And I want to kind of understand the product a little better. So, like, the initial business was to build websites and then put banners in it. And
no, initial business was not building website. We were working with the website owners.
Okay. And taking space from them, and
so we only had a technology to provide the ads in real time. So they will put a code, embed that into their site. Just the way very, very similar to how Google AdSense work.
Right.
Okay. We had a code for mobile sites. And we'll put it up, and based on the device type, location, time, our system will serve an ad. For every $100 what we make, we'll be taking 30 to 35% of that share of the revenue. Remaining will go in the hands of publisher.
Okay. And then once people started launching mobile specific sites, then you essentially started offering the same thing on mobile sites and probably on mobile apps also.
Correct. Because of philosophy remains same, but little bit technicality gets changed. And experience for sure.
Okay. So how did you acquire inventory? Was it like self sign up and like people would discover you and sign up, or did you have like a team which was reaching out to places that were getting traffic and telling them that use our advertising platform? You know, like how did that because I guess this is essentially inventory led business, right? Like if you have the inventory, then the advertisers will automatically come.
Correct. So it was both. So we did have a self-serve interface, but business actually had, if not 80-20, 70-30. 30% of your publishers will be 70% of your business.
Okay.
So, so we had a BD team who was going after these publishers to get these deals in place.
And of which, like, the first few, I guess you would have personally gone out to, because I can see on LinkedIn that you were head of business development. So this team which was going out acquiring publishers, and this was all built by you only.
Correct. That was my day job. Yeah.
Okay. So how was that shift like for you from being a techie to being a, you know, being in a sales role in a way?
Yeah, to start with, it was not super easy. At the same time, you know, you figure it out. So maybe the upbringing and then maybe the IIT system which teaches you, and I would say everyone, I will not just give undue credit to the college, but you figure it out. I think when you are an entrepreneur, only thing you know and you learn and you get better at is to figure things out.
Right.
That's
true.
How things happen with us as well, with me as well personally. So starting selling to our partners in India, to global customers, started learning that trick. And when you deal with folks in Indonesia and in London, in UK, in Germany, in Japan. So, yeah, you start to learn all of those things.
So tell me about your learnings on how to do enterprise sales. You know, like what if someone new joined Immobi and you had to give them your wisdom of how to do enterprise sales, what would it be?
I think it's not a cookie cutter answer because it's different for different segments. But in our case, the value proposition was reasonably straightforward. That, you know what, I am going to make money for you. Second interesting thing that, unlike right now, back then there were not many mobile first or mobile only publishers. So everyone had some kind of website or desktop. They were transitioning or adding their mobile sites also. They knew, okay, this is what monetization means. And after that, you know, you do talk about ad quality, ad formats, how much money they will make. So I will not trivialize that it was easy. At the same time, you know, and we were the only, you know, there were not many companies. We had the advantage of we being the only game in town. And second thing is you're making money for them. And even from advertiser perspective, that's other customer segment we were chasing. So they also were like, okay, I'm hearing a lot about mobile advertising. Tell me, what do I do? So we will consult them, and they will say, okay, I will allocate X percentage of my marketing budget for mobile advertising. So yeah, so market knew what is digital advertising. That he helped us in a manner. And post that, yeah, a lot of things you figure out. I don't answer your question.
Why wouldn't someone just sign up with Google? Why wouldn't they sign up with Immobi? Was it because Google didn't operate in that territory?
They did not have a good sales presence. So business is all about ad dollars. You know, and the ad dollars were local. So the publishing inventory was global, but ad dollars were local. So that's why, you know, anyone who is doing a good job on bringing the right ad dollar probably have a little bit better advantage. And also, agency business, they value, you know, touch and feel.
Right.
So they know they can talk to someone. Friendly thing. And to give it to our team also, we were doing a good job on that. We were focused. So from a Google's perspective, they were live in 50 countries. Hmm. We were live in like two or three countries. So hmm. our level of execution was beating them. And had been the case that, you know, we were doing this business in the US on day one, certainly we would have been killed. We would have, you know, inferior product, and also, you know, not for great length and breadth of our relationships with both sides.
Okay. And so I can see that you eventually became the US head. So like you decided to take on Google head on.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult and complex statement to make. But clearly, US has been in Mobi's largest revenue region after China. You know, I think after that it's China. And you know, we basically saw that we our market share can get actually much better. And while we had ahead of US or North America region, but somewhere the team felt that the level of attention and love and care they need, they were not getting it. So among the founders, we decided that, you know, one of us should move there. So that team gets stability, at least sense of stability, and also up-level the team. So I actually, when I went there, I had to let go a few people who were not performing, and more importantly, their mindset was not right. And hired a leadership team, built the team, who were passionate, who wanted to give fight to Facebook and Google. And you needed that energy. And so I did that. And along with that, I also started another product called Glance, which was trying to figure out a business model with telcos as well as with handset manufacturers. So I was wearing two hats back then.
So tell me about Glance. Like, what exactly was it that you launched?
Certainly. So Glance is a platform for lock screen. For any Android phone, you know, there's a lock screen where you, when you switch on the phone, you see the lock screen, and then you log in, and basically you put up your password and you get into that. So rather than me showing you a boring lock screen, we basically came up with this idea of putting life to that lock screen. So if you buy, for example, Samsung or Xiaomi phone in India, they come pre-built with that product.
Okay.
So you are being shown interesting news, fun, entertainment, motivation. So there's a lot. So it's kind of a wallpaper, but it is very contextual, and it's very very rich, very feature rich. That product also became very, very big. In fact, 3 months ago, Google invested a large sum of equity money. So that also, by the way, a unicorn. Decided to make that product a separate company. And investment happened in that company also.
Okay. But how did you acquire users for this then? Was it through OEM tie-ups or?
It was through OEM tie-ups.
Okay.
So it was a B2B2C model.
And what made you take this bet that you need to build something like Glance?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what was the insight that you were chasing here?
Certainly. So it is actually now linking with your Google problem, a Google point where we were like, okay, Google has access to 1.5 billion people or devices. Mobi also has the same number of devices we see on our network through publishers though. But the depth, so advertising business, there are two things that actually give you or make you a winner. First, that how much is the share of time of user you control from a media consumption perspective. The second important element is that how deeply you know the user, right? So Facebook and Google back then they were taking almost 20 to 25 minutes of daily usage time across the properties. And that's the reason they were very powerful. So the type of targeting they can allow and type of ad formats they can do is significantly different than, you know, InMobi was doing. So, you know, one path that, that you try to make a service which is like Facebook, YouTube, etc. The second path was that, okay, you know, how do we, because making those B2C properties is not easy. You need to come up with a value proposition which may not happen. Also, you have a large and very meaty, you know, depth in terms of usage and data. Then we decided that, okay, you know, where this data is going to get accumulated and where do you get the maximum time. So I think after some thinking, it was very evident that in this entire mobile internet, value creation has actually happened for the app players as well as the OS or the ecosystem providers. But these handset manufacturers, they basically have been beaten down because the average selling price has only gone down and the margins have only shrunk. The hardware. And you might have seen even Apple's latest earning report where their profit pool actually has now lopsided in the favor of App Store.
Their
hardware has not gone up in last 10 years. This was the learning. And that led us to we going to likes of Samsung's and Xiaomi's and Oppo's and Vivo's. Who understood that, okay, yeah, they need to also make some value in this entire mobile internet. They don't understand the content. They don't understand advertising or for that matter, any form of paid and promoted media. And this is where we came handy. So when we presented that, oh, this is a consumer value proposition, where we will be building a consumer habit. And then sometime those content pieces can also have a commercial angle. We will make sure that the commercial angle is a secondary point. What you want to do is create a value for the customer lock screen. And they loved the idea. And we built on that and we got almost every major handset manufacturer to sign up for that.
Okay. But so this became a way for them to make their low-cost phones like give them a stream of revenue like for years after the sale happened in a way.
Did not do that because I said that you were doing that commercial intent messages only that much. For example, Amazon came up with a phone which they were selling you for cheaper price. In fact, you got a tablet. You know, where you can say that, okay, I will see ads and in return you will have $50 off. We have not done that. At least no one has done that in India. Primary reason is also because India, the ARPUs of the ad dollars are not very high. So the money you can make per user in the US and India, then it's 1:10. It was not worth it. But at the same time, they understood that there's a value. In fact, it's being sold as a feature. It's a strong feature for all of these guys. And they are happy about it and they also make money sometimes.
But the money currently is not very significant is what
I would say. It is it's decent. At the same time, it is not big enough the way US can give you a subsidy of $50. You don't have that level of advertising goodness.
So this was like essentially an experiment that scaled up. What were the other experiments that you would have run at InMobi? I imagine that they, you know, like any other tech startup, there would have been a culture of trying out a lot of things.
So as a company, InMobi did many things. Me individually only, I led this part. So because I was busy with business side and only, you know, only during my last 2.5 years with the company, I really owned this product vision to execution. But at company level, InMobi tried some products related. There was also a commerce discovery platform we tried. Innovation was in the DNA. We tried multiple things. And some of them worked, some of them did not work, as it happened.
If you like to hear stories of founders, then we have tons of great stories from entrepreneurs who have built billion-dollar businesses. Just search for the Founder Thesis podcast on any audio streaming app like Spotify, Gaana, Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to the show.
So just like my 30-year promise to myself, I had a 40-year promise to myself.
Okay.
That I will be retiring. Although when I started, turning 50, I realized that that's not something I will actually enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I did ask myself and some of my mentors, and I realized that I want to do something for the social impact.
Okay.
And this itch of me led to thinking about Yulu, because InMobi actually was a very different setup. We did have an opportunity to make something for social impact, but that would be done out of CSR, not as a company's vision. So, I thought about it. I thought, if I don't do it, and if then maybe I'll regret when I turn 50. So this was the thinking. So that led me to think about Yulu, and then I was very lucky and fortunate to get a very amazing co-founding team. So kind of believed in that vision. So we came together.
So you wanted to do social impact. Why did you narrow down on specifically short distance commute?
Yeah, so the pain point I wanted to solve, or we wanted to solve, was reduce traffic congestion.
Okay.
To improve the air quality. And the solution part of that became what we are doing. We think that is probably one of the path to solve for that problem. Or two problems. Why I chose mobility, primary reason was that these two problems impact me and my friends and my family. It cuts across gender, age, your financial status, religion. So, irrespective, you will get stuck in the traffic, no matter how fancy is your car. You have to breathe the same air, no matter how whatever you are. So there are problems in India which you can skirt, you can have your way. But there are problems which you have to be part of, or you are part of. So I decided to pick up something which is, as I said, impacting me and my friends and family, so that I am reminded of that vision every day.
Okay. And did you have global examples which you saw and then decided this is how you should do it? What helped you form your product vision?
Yeah. So luckily, there was some work happening in China and also in the US. So there was some early, built out of your own thinking that, okay, this is how the solution will look like. However, that copy paste did not work, or has not worked generally in India. So you have to figure out something for India. And this is what happened with us as well. We did start with using pedal bicycle, where there was an IoT where you can locate the bike, open it using an app. But the bicycle was only solving for limited use cases. And when we had this ambition of moving millions of people to sustainable mobility, then cities like Delhi, Bombay, every city where the weather condition is not on your side, and even Bangalore, like after 2 kilometers, a person who is commuting for work, they were not willing to pedal. And the use case was more of healthcare or fitness on the weekend. We were not fascinated with reducing calorie. You know, we were fascinated with reducing pollution and in traffic congestion. So we needed them to use Yulu for their daily commute. And this is where we started working on the electric mobility part, which was also ticking out of the boxes. So instead of pedaling, you know, you have a small battery which is giving you all the power to move forward. The product, what we have chosen, is also legally a bicycle. So it is just a bicycle, very simple product. A driving license or any complexity. So simple to ride, and our claim to fame is that anyone who has done any two wheels in their lifetime can ride that product in less than 30 seconds. So it doesn't matter in what stage of life you were able to balance two wheels and you can ride. Super cool, super easy product, good for women, good for even senior citizens. And really, youngsters love it. So, you know, they have no hassle experience. So they find you lose in front of their college, offices, homes, metros. So wherever you think that people are moving, we are able to create our parking spots. We call them Yulu zones. They can pick our bike from those places using Yulu app. And then just have to drop it back at one of our network parking areas. Typically is close to their destination.
Okay. So I have like multiple questions to understand this better. Like, you know, so InMobi was like a tech play where you probably did not need to bother with things like government licensing and permissions and stuff like that. Whereas this, I imagine, even to launch with simple cycles, there must have been a lot of government hurdles to cross, right? Like how did you cross those hurdles? Did you need some sort of permission to offer cycles on rent, and also the parking spaces? Like, how did you acquire those parking spaces? Like, how did you get this off the ground?
Sure. So, actually, technical answer is because of bicycles. There is actually technically no requirement for you to take any permission. If you remember in your childhood, I don't know if you have rented a bicycle.
No.
I did. That's how I learned my bicycle.
Okay.
That did not need to have a permission from the city authorities. He's just doing his best. But what we realize that, you know, working with government is very, very important. Because they are the one who is going to support you. Give you, you know, spaces for parking, and they will also help you with awareness creation. And this is where, you know, one of our co-founders, whose name is R.K. Mishra, he's actually, you know, he's a pro, you know, is a pro in this policy making, working with government, etc.
Okay.
So that's how we basically started building all of that. You know, we went to the cities, Bangalore and Pune. Yeah, that this is what we want to do. This is what we have done in terms of our own product. And we got a lot of encouragement and support from the city authorities. And that's how our journey started.
Okay. And to get this off the ground, did you first take permissions and get the government relationships in place, or did you just build an app, get some cycles, and launch it in one city? Or, you know, like tell me about that.
So we actually chose the second part. Only difference was that we were not launching at a city level. We launched it at a section of a pin code.
Okay.
So there's an area in Belandur called Eco Space Eco World. So we basically put 100 bikes in that area on day one. We got permission from RMZ. So they were very supportive, and there were spaces. And then people who were working there, they saw those blue colored bikes, and they started scanning the QR code, and everything was very simple and easy. After maybe a month or so, we were already in touch with the city authorities. And by then, we also got invited from city of Pune.
Okay.
there was a very, very dynamic and progressive officer who was responsible for the overall mobility of the city. So in Bangalore, in Pune, unlike Bangalore, we actually got permission on day one.
Okay.
And then we started. In Bangalore, we started because everything was happening in parallel, to be very honest. Bangalore took maybe another month or so to figure things out. So the business plan that how it should work. But I must say that we were very fortunate to get all the support from the city authorities.
And the parking spaces were provided by the city authorities.
So it's a combination. There are spaces provided by the city authorities, spaces provided by the metro, your real estate developers who will give you spaces in front of their tech park.
And these are like paid by you or like it's a infrastructure for them to offer mobility to their users?
You can say that a large portion of that, they don't charge any money.
Okay.
Reason is they also see that it is their role or it is their contribution to make our cities better.
Okay. And how did you fund this? You know, because you would have had to purchase the bikes and like this is fairly asset heavy. Unlike say Uber, which doesn't need to purchase any cars, here all of these bikes were purchased by you only, I guess.
Yeah. So we actually raised venture capital money. We raised approximately $7 million in our seed funding. And we were able to buy these assets.
Okay.
Good part is while we have to pay money for the asset, customer acquisition cost for us has been zero. So companies like Uber and Ola, they are asset light, but they have to spend a bomb now building this marketplace. Like giving a lot of discounts and acquire customer cost a bomb. So the choice of the business model A versus B. You do need to raise some capital to build the business.
Okay. And what is like the unit economics of this? Like how much does a bike cost you and how much do you earn from a bike over its lifetime? And what is the lifetime of a bike? And, you know, can you talk about stuff like that?
Yes, some of the numbers for sure. So in terms of the bike cost, currently, you know, we are spending approximately 50,000 rupees per bike. That inclusive of the batteries, the extra batteries. We use swappable battery technology where a bunch of batteries are always under charging operation. Also the infrastructure which we have built for charging station. So and we believe that this pricing will come down to around 30,000 rupees within a couple of years. And the primary reason is that we have a strategic tie-up with Bajaj, who is trying to make everything in India. So currently we have to import some components, actually a lot of the component from outside of India.
Especially and batteries, I guess, because I don't think it...
Battery is also from India.
Okay.
The cell come from outside of India, actually Japan. There are basically a lot of external dependencies. And we think that in next 2 years, as a country, we'll be in a very, very good stage to indigenize all of this. So the cost will come down to below 30,000 rupees. So that's one part of the equation. And then we are currently charging our customers on the basis of time. So we charge 5 rupees to start. And then depending on the city, per minute charge of 1 rupee 50 paisa or 2 rupees charge. Then these bikes actually are good for 3.5 to 4 years in the usage condition in the form of shared mobility.
Okay. And, what is the number of bikes you have out on the road right now? And, you know, how has that grown over the last 1 or 2 years?
Certainly. So our journey with respect to electric mobility is now close to 2 years, little bit more than 2 years. And we have 10,000 electric vehicles.
Okay.
That makes us the largest electric mobility company in India.
Okay. Okay.
And this number has grown. So if I talk about pre-corona, so back in February 2020, we had 4,000 assets.
Okay.
And by September time frame, we had 10,000 of them.
So we have, you actually grew during the lockdown?
Yes, we grew in terms of the fleet, in terms of the revenue. So our revenue grew 2.5x. Our profitability grew 3x. A good portion of basically leveraging our business comes from the density. As we were growing, we were also going denser. And the density basically got our profitability also to jump to 3x from our pre-corona numbers. We were the only company who was showing growth and improvement in our metrics.
This sounds a little counterintuitive. I would have guessed that people would not be traveling due to the lockdown and the numbers would have come down. So what is the reason for this?
Yeah, so what happened that while the cities were under lockdown or there were some open up or lockdown both, but there always be someone or the other who was on the road.
Yeah.
That is kind of a And the problem was that, you know, not everyone in India has a vehicle. In fact, 80% of the people in India don't have any vehicle. And they need to use some public mode of transportation. And Yulu became the safest mode to commute because it was no passenger or driver.
Right. So social distancing is like built in.
Bang on. So we gained significant amount of market share for people who were earlier using group mobility in some shape or form. And while the top of the funnel shrunk, the movement what we got from other buckets of mobility, that actually compensated.
What do you mean by this statement? Sorry, can you just...
So for example, earlier say 100 people were on the road, but because of corona, people started working from home. 100 number became 30.
Right.
Earlier, out of 100 people who were on the road, only 5 people were using us. But when it became 35, then that 35, you know, out of that
50% of them were.
So we were basically having 7 or 8 people who were using us. So we basically got net addition of users significantly high. Our usage per user per month went up by 40%. They were not only using it, but they were using even more. Same thing happened with our ARPUs, monthly ARPUs. Because of the higher usage, our monthly ARPU also shot up by almost 40%. We were basically a net gain from this situation. This is not the only company, by the way, not the only company in India, basically in the world. There are a lot of global peers what Yulu has got. We also saw the similar amount of goodness in their respective businesses. So this concept of self-driven electric two-wheeler, you know, which you can use for moving around the city, became a global phenomena, successful phenomena during pandemic time.
Okay. How much do you currently earn per bike? Like, if you are at liberty to share?
I told you my pricing equation. So typically, one of our trips will give us close to $40, 35 to $40, and then we made multiple trips per bike.
Got it. And help me understand the competitive landscape. Like Bounce and Vogo are your competitors here. So what is the difference between you and Bounce and Vogo? Or like, you know, what are just if you can help our listeners understand that landscape.
Certainly. So first of all, we actually don't see either of Bounce or Vogo as our competition. So we are a category on its own. I think we compete probably more with an auto rickshaw and walking rather than Bounce and Vogo.
Why is that?
And the reason is, you know, for example, when you look at, let's say, a four-wheeler space, will you count Meru and that the typical taxi and Uber with the same lens?
No.
Is Meru and Uber same?
No. Yeah, Meru has their own vehicle. Basically, Meru is a fleet operator in a way, right?
Not even for business model, but also the customer segment they are targeting the with their service. So Vogo, first of all, they have petrol scooters, which is being taken up by people who are gig workers.
Okay.
They go to Vogo station, they take the scooter and they deliver food or they deliver something, right? So this is how the 80 to 90% of their TG look like. Bounce is a mixed bag where a portion of their vehicles will be used just like Vogo. Also, there will be people who are skipping the mid-mile. So someone who would have taken, let's say, a bus or something else, they would have taken Bounce. You at the same time, we basically are, first of all, pure electric. Second thing, our solution set is more optimized for the short distances. Our average distance, for example, in Bangalore is around 4 kilometers. Same thing for Bounce is 8 or 9.
Okay.
And the number for Vogo is around 12, 13 kilometers.
Okay.
So, yeah, both all of us are using two-wheelers as a form factor.
But
the business model and the TG is very different.
Okay.
So, and then there will be some overlap, so don't get me wrong. So we will have some 10-15% overlap with everyone. But at core, we are a solution for first mile, last mile, and, where someone has to go for a short distance. And so we are very specific. So if you look at the mobility landscape, so it's called multimodal transportation or multimodal mobility of a city. So we work with public transportation. We complement to their journeys rather than fighting with them or competing with them.
Like where the metro ends is where someone can pick up.
That's the reason we have been given spaces at metro station, bus stations. They see us as a part of the solution and not as a competition. And that's what by the vision we have got. We have no wish of replacing metro rides or bus rides. We want to, we want more and more people to take public transportation so that city can get decongested. This is our vision.
Okay. Why did you choose a docked approach? Like, you know, that people pick up from a dock and drop it off at a dock?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. First of all, when you are letting people drop it anywhere, they will actually leave it at all random places, which not only increases the theft and vandalism, but also operationally, it is supremely difficult to manage.
Right.
And last but not the least, the citizens also do not like it. Because then someone will leave it at my gate, at my park.
Right.
So there's a huge backlash across the globe, you know, where this kind of model did not work. In fact, China, which was known to be the pioneer of this dockless concept, even now they are basically moving towards the concept of these are the designated zone areas. You are basically allowed to be parking the vehicles there. In fact, I don't know if you have been to China, but many places you will see a board that, oh, shared bikes are not allowed. Because they will leave it in random places. It's a menace. It's a pain.
So what is the, you know, what do you think are the tech drivers for this going ahead? Are you looking at, like, you know, bringing in self-driving into this, or, you know, what are you focusing on as the key tech drivers to make the product experience and the customer experience better?
So, you know, our product is self-driving. So, yeah, it's not cool because human is driving, but I think it's a very practical answer with our cultural aspects as well as infrastructure. But as far as the technology is concerned, you know, we look at technology not by the zero and one, which is coding. For us, a great vehicle is also an engineering marvel, right? So we have a lot of work going on in making sure that the vehicle itself is basically very safe, comfortable, durable. So a lot of work happens on that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them work on the hardware side with a IoT. So the unit that makes vehicle smart, Nikhil, is also done by Yulu. So we have the IP.
Okay.
Charging station, for example, is also one unique product we have created.
Mm-hmm.
We are able to place them at mom and pop store.
Mm-hmm.
And we have built our own private charging network.
Okay.
Which comes in like one of its own kind in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It just requires a 15 ampere plug. So that is also our own innovation and our own work.
Okay. And
the work we have been doing on the software stack side, where a very high quality deep tech work happening using ML and AI for operational efficiency purpose. So our business model is to make sure that we have the bike at the right time, at the right place.
Mm.
And to make that happen, you basically leverage technology.
Mm.
And, when you say placement is one thing that, okay, this bike is at that Yulu zone, but does it have a charge battery? Is it in good shape to use? There's a lot of operations that happens under the hood where you as a customer, you come out of your building, you move with high degree of predictability that there will be Yulus waiting for me. If I can, they will work. I will have a pleasant ride and then I can leave it and something else will happen. So the amount that happens in the background, it's all driven through technology and there's a serious amount of AI and ML and operational excellence that happens under the hood.
So you actually like move bikes around every night, like to the places which would be optimum in terms of the demand to pick up and like.
Yeah. So first of all, we don't have to move every bike because it's always a natural movement.
Yes.
So on a given day, we will be moving maybe 10% of our asset.
Okay.
To maximize our yield.
Hmm.
There are places where there's a lot of demand, but supply position is low and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We basically have a way to move them,
and
it happens 24/7, not just the night time.
Okay, okay, okay. And your AI ML tools would also tell you about predictive maintenance, like when something needs to be maintained or needs to be. Okay.
So they tell me that these many bikes needs to be moved from this spot to that spot.
Mm-hmm.
They tell me that this vehicle is going to run out of charge. That the vehicle requires this preventive maintenance, and certainly the reactive maintenance because the customer will flag it. So this is all machine driven. What route to take to do these 10 tasks in what sequence? If someone did that or not? Interesting pieces which is being done through technology.
Super interesting. And how responsible are customers? Do you face vandalism issues or theft issues? And I mean, India is like a low trust economy, low trust country. So does that happen a lot or like what percentage do you see that?
Yeah. So our theft and vandalism rate is 0.6%.
Okay.
It's lowest in the world. The industry's average is 3.
Okay.
And, we actually have cracked this problem by a very unique India-centric playbook.
What is that?
A large portion of that is actually driven because of the fact that it is dock to dock.
Okay.
That is one very important point.
And
then we have our own ways to manage the situation. We have our own private bike marshals. We have our own private police. So some interesting stuff on that. Now, from a customer's vandalism or misuse perspective, the biggest non-compliance what we see is that they actually leave vehicle not at Yulu zone, but they be leaving it away from Yulu zone. And 80 to 90% of the time, it is actually not by intention, but it is non-intentional. And the reason being that, and particularly in Bangalore, where other company decided to do dockless. So they were confused that, but I can leave this vehicle anywhere.
Okay.
It's only for the new guys. And when they do that, the portion of new guys, sometimes they do it, then we basically give them a warning. After that, we start putting penalty. So they also basically get on the right track. So it's more learning and evolution rather than the bad intent. The bad intent sometimes do happens from people who are not our users. So they will come and sometimes they will kick the bike, they will do some damage. But instances of that is actually a handful. You can count on fingers.
Okay, amazing.
The Udo zones are on the visible places. They also know that they do something wrong with the bike. We will actually know somehow, like we have a way. Then they will be in trouble. And we make sure that they are in trouble. So as a company, we have done an amazing job in compliance. So there will be some consequences of you doing something wrong with us.
Okay, amazing. Have you had cases where customers have just like taken the bike home?
Yeah, many times.
Okay, so then your IoT would track the bike and you would have to send somebody or...
Yeah, many times.
Okay.
Sometimes by intention, sometimes not by intention. So they don't know what they need to do. New service.
Okay.
If you ask me that, do we have a problem with customers' intention? That will be the last thing in our bucket.
Okay. So, what is your plan to retire now? Like, do you have like a time frame that at this age I will actually retire, or you will never retire?
I fail on that promise, so I don't want to comment.
Okay.
Your family will kill me.
Okay.
So that was Amit Gupta telling us about Yulu Bike. If you like to know more about this venture, please log on to yulu.bike.
If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
This episode of Founder Thesis Podcast is brought to you by Long Haul Ventures. Long Haul Ventures is the long haul partner for founders and startups that are building for the long haul. More about them is at www.longhaulventures.com.